Media Network.
Three, two,
and we're back.
And we are back.
It's Roast with KM Bell and Tom. They're your Roastmasters.
And we're back.
Yeah, you know, nothing big happening in the world right now. Very slow news day.
Not at all. Nothing much at all. Go ahead.
I'll tell you what. Let's do the sad news out of the way first.
Let's get the sad news out of the way. That's right. What seemed to have happened is that David Simon from The Wire was banned from Twitter recently. But then, you know, I'll get to his comments here shortly. But then again, something else happened that was kind of interesting. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, no, I don't understand what yours is about. So you go ahead. I've heard nothing
that
of
was
it.
That was a deflect and a throw.
It was.
I was just totally deflecting from the news of the day. I woke up this morning. My wife gets up to go to work because she works a long day. And when she's up, it's before dawn. Okay. So generally when she wakes up, sometimes I might wake up just for a few minutes. We're talking, you know, before five. Okay. And I have tried and I have failed to pour a pot of coffee first before I look at my phone. My fucking phone. And that was the first thing I saw. I just picked it up and I just happened to notice 7 minutes earlier, Anthony Bourdain was dead. And then we find out that he was dead by suicide. He was dead by suicide in all places, France. So it was just like, holy fuck. I mean, that's a gut punch. Not just that, the fact that he touched so many lives, but in the way in which his ethics in communicating were, the bringing everybody together, no matter who you were, no matter from what country, what place of the world, everybody came together at the table. And the other fact was that it was suicide and he had hung himself. And we've already had another, you know, celebrity suicide this week. There was a subject where we had talked about a couple of years ago about Robin Williams committing suicide. And I did a whole show on that bit. But I just thought this was particularly painful as a gut punch, because he was so well known by everybody. Where to begin?
Well, all right. Not a huge Bourdain fan per se. And a lot of that is really not having, I fell out of love with food television when he was in between shows, and him moving over to CNN was long after I had stopped watching anything on CNN that, you know, wasn't Anderson Cooper. So, but I was aware in his book, The Kitchen Confidential, reminded me just so much of my days in restaurants and working, just how fucking awful it is to work in a restaurant kitchen, how just absolutely fucking terrible it is. And you know, there he is telling, you know, good stories, but also the truth about what it's like where you go to eat. And you can't disassociate the guy for telling the truth about an industry that people pretend is not severely fucked up. You can't ignore the places that this guy went and the people that he spent time with. And just from almost every story you hear about him running into people out in the wild is that he was approachable, that he was kind, that he was interested, that he gave time to his fans. And it is a painful, I think, reminder of how delicate the human psyche is, that he, I don't know. I mean, part of it is, it's not any better if it's a David Carradine situation. It's not. But
no, although that is an interesting thing you bring that up. I mean, you know, David Carr dies, but he dies because of a massive heart attack. And he was an influential journalist and taught many important people. But the thing about Bourdain, what made him interesting, and I did, you know, the show was watched in this house. It wasn't necessarily my appointment viewing. It wasn't anything that I would spend time, a lot of time with. But when I watched it and when I saw it, I was struck by the fact that you have a non-journalist telling interesting narrative tales. He was a fuck of a writer. And if you really want to study writing and understanding, you know, other human beings, listen to his words, read his words. He really had some powerful storytelling and takeaways.
Now, his book was wonderfully written. And the fact that he isn't an author and you know, I don't know. I caught it. I'm never surprised by what people do for the most part. Usually the timing. This one startled me, and I don't know if it startled me because of what it was or if it startled me the way that it was, that the news was broken to me on CNN this morning, because it was obviously the dude who was telling the story was just sad. And both anchors had tears in their eyes, and they were both upset.
You could feel it.
Yeah. And so the guy was just like, well, he hung himself. And then he just sat there quiet. And then he said some more stuff. And they said some more stuff. And then he just threw it back to them. And it was like, wow, that was blunt as fuck. You know, so. Yeah, it was.
His friend found him. I mean, we're watching. I don't know if you've caught Chef's Table on Netflix.
Yes.
They had his friend.
I've overheard it a couple of times. I've been in the room for some of it, but I don't, like I said.
I mean, it is an amazing documentary. I mean, it really, really is that good. And I'm not like a food centric, you know, kind of person, but if there is a piece that is good enough, I will watch it. And his best friend, or his friend found him, who was another chef. You know, and he's in that series as well. They're all like, they all know each other.
Yeah.
And I'm just actually taken aback as to the why now. I don't understand. I mean, he seemed to understand and stand up for those who are trodden, for those who were pushed to the margins, for those who were punished. Abused and, you know, for no reason other than the color of their skin or on the wrong side of an imaginary geographic line.
Sure.
He knew where what humanity needed to be applied. He had the right amount of outrage, just as everybody else did. And I'm like, well, it's kind of interesting because he had, you know, a huge portion of his life that was very self-destructive, portion of his life that was, you know, had a lot of, you know, had heroin. I know at least a person who has battled and dealt with depression or battled and dealt with heroin addiction and tells me that that is something that they have to deal with for the rest of their life. And, you know, just like you have an individual who deals with alcoholism. I cannot fathom it. Perhaps I was lucky in that era that I didn't fall into that invasiveness of drug experience. But he did, came out of it, had another kind of life, had much more success, was able to articulate himself, and then hung himself. So it's inexplicable. So we're incapable of to me, I'm just like, I can't square it. I can't complete the why. I mean, there is no why.
He I'll tell you where he hit me. And that was a gift I was given several years ago by my buddy JC, you know, from the World's Greatest Comic Book Podcasts every Tuesday at worldsgreatestpodcast.com. And it was a graphic novel called Get Jiro by Anthony Bourdain. And he wrote it, and it was a gory fucking book. I loved it. It really was. And he wrote a sequel to it called Get Jiro Blood and Sushi. And he just launched a new series in January with Dark Horse Comics called Hungry Ghosts. And so this dude, for every bit of media that he hit, you know, he got me in a couple of different places.
He's with Dark Horse, huh?
He was for Hungry Ghosts.
Wow, because that's from around here.
What's that?
That's from around here. They're nearby in Milwaukee. They got practically a whole street to themselves.
I thought you live in Oregon. Where are you?
I'm down from Milwaukee, Oregon.
Oregon. Milwaukee, Oregon. Not the real Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, Oregon. There, London, if you go down Toronto? One of the main streets in Milwaukee, there Dark Horse Records is I'm sorry, Dark Horse Records. Dark Horse is there. They're located. They've got a couple of storefronts down there.
Yeah. So anyway, the thing with Get Jiro was is the setup on it is that we're question mark years from now. L.A. is basically run like a crime town, but all the crime bosses are famous chefs. and Jiro is the world's greatest sushi chef. And so the other crime boss chefs are trying to kill him, and it just turns into a mess. And it was glorious. I mean, it was just... So if you guys haven't picked up that one, if you haven't read of that one, or you didn't know he was doing comic books, take a look at that one. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, I'm sad. It's, you know, to go back to the point that I was making earlier is the inability to understand, you know, one, where people are at, and two, what makes us snap or what makes us not snap or what keeps us from that point?
And dealing with it took us a while for us to figure out for the news to eventually trickle out that Robin Williams had Lewy body syndrome.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't necessarily the depression. I'm sure that was a part of it, but the idea that he wasn't going to live and decompose and just fall into ruin, mental ruin. And he took his life. There are states where you have the right to, if you've been diagnosed and you're going to die, you can hasten that end. You could do it and you could do it legally. There are stories now of people piling up that take their own lives for whatever reason. I mean, I'm not going to say that in Bourdain's case, I don't know what's in his head. I don't know what the triggers or what the reasons are. But I understand depression very well. And all I could say is that I think sometimes people do have to reach in to those people who are suffering and be able to help pull them to a place where they at least can talk about it and get it out rather than suffer in silence, which does happen.
Yeah. Another thing
is a lostness.
Let's swing. 1-800-273-8255 is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. If you are sad or if you are feeling thoughts of harm or of harming others, call them. Spend a few minutes. Just see how you feel after. Okay? No promises. Just 1-800-273-8255. Now let's complain. Now let me bitch. Minnesota is about to lose their suicide hotline. Because Republicans refuse to pay for it. North Carolina had its suicide prevention funding blocked by Republicans, even though one Republican says, "Oh no, it'll be just fine. We'll just keep it." They just can't have no money. And those are all recent. That's all in the last couple of weeks. So, you know, again, every time a Republican tells you they're pro-life, just remember that is not post-womb. That is pre-birth. Once you make your way outside of the confines of the uterine wall, you're all done. You know, this is America.
You're on your own.
Yep. So, I don't know.
And that's the thing is that we will have, we are in this maelstrom, this dystopian maelstrom where there are people who take their own lives or people who are hunted in mass shootings. And the conversation by the spokespeople for the NRA immediately goes to mental health. And we talk and we with platitudes and we speechify about mental health and putting more funding toward mental health. And then that very party does nothing for people or for help.
Right.
In any way. And your anger is right. Your anger needs to motivate you.
You know what?
To take action.
Tom, I don't even know if I'm angry at this point. There is nothing. All I did while we were talking, was type suicide hotline Republicans and up pops news. And it's like, okay, that's where we're at. We did, however, there was a rumor of a 3-digit hotline.
That wouldn't be a bad idea.
Oh, of course not.
Why not? That makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
I think that ought to be done. Now that we're about to lose pre-existing conditions, because the Trump administration, because Trump was embarrassed by Obama in 2011 at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, we're all going to suffer for every single thing. Pre-existing conditions. I mean, you name it. Every single thing is being sabotaged. I mean, the other thing that I just want to kind of sidetrack on another way here.
You sidetrack your ass off, brother.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Is that I immediately thought, this is exactly where my head's at, that within minutes of hearing about Bourdain, I was thinking, okay, how soon the trolls? Soon the trolls, and there they are. And then, of course, the only reason why I'm saying this is because I want to make a statement about this. This is really, to me, this is really, I think it's pretty much time for us to really rethink where we are with how we felt how the internet was supposed to bring us together and social media rips us apart. So there's a certain guy who went on the air today and claimed Bourdain was murdered by globalists because he was going to do a Kanye West or something. This guy has a well-known show and who has propagated all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories, also put out theories that the entire the grade school that where the kids in Newtown, Connecticut was all done by crisis actors. All I just have to say is that it has now created a universe of individuals, trolls and those who poison the dialogue, who just poison it with evil. They come in and they say these things just simply because not only do they want the attention, but simply because to me, they come with a rot of ill will and they poison the dialogue. And to me, this is, this is what I see every single day.
So are you not saying Alex Jones' name because you don't want to?
I don't want to say that fucker's name.
Well, see, that's the thing about his name is because he's not in prison or anything. I still want to warn people so that they remember to warn people. Because make no mistake, it's going to be few and far between those that are not a member of our choir are listening to this. But you never know when they forget because the dude is a fucking lunatic. And I mean, right now he's a lawsuit magnet and I hope that he ends up buried under them. I really, really do.
And I want to circle back toward the David Simon comment this morning. This is a writer that was responsible for The Wire. And he actually has been recently banned from Twitter and he had an interesting kind of take on things. As I am at this moment indifferent to removing the tweets that they insist are violative of their rules, it is unclear when I will return to that framework that is Twitter. I've been banned from Twitter. So I'm hoping that if I post anything remotely meaningful about something that's important to me, and today it's Tony Bourdain, others will do me the favor of linking it beyond my posting at my blog.
Yeah.
Suffice to say that while you can arrive on Twitter and disseminate the untethered and anti-human opinion that mothers who have their children kidnapped and held incommunicado from them at the American border are criminals, and both mother and child deserve that fate, or that 14-year-old boys who survived the Holocaust are guilty of betraying fellow Jews when there is no such evidence, you cannot wish that these people should go away and die of a fulminant venereal rash. Slander is cruel. Slander is cool. Brutality is acceptable. But the hyperbolic and comic hope that a just God might smite the slanderer or brutalizer with a deadly skin disorder is somehow beyond the pale. And it goes on to just wish the very creator of Twitter the worst. Seriously, as far as I'm concerned, your standards in this instance are exactly indicative of why social media, and Twitter specifically, is complicit in transforming our national agora into a haven for lies, disinformation, and the politics of totalitarian extremity. The real profanity and disease on the internet is untouched while you police decorum. And what that is all about is just simply there was an there was something that David Simon had put out, and he got banned from Twitter. Okay. Meanwhile, the more graver offenses that I just talked about with what's his name in Texas there go on.
Right.
And go on with impunity. And to me, this is the thing. I remember just sitting with a friend who was very much into the new technology of the internet, like more than 20 years ago. And he goes, you know, we're going to take over. We're going to kill advertising. This is going to be really, really, you know, amazing. You know, I just thought to myself, yeah, you certainly did. You fucking wrecked it. Wrecked everything. Good job. You're a fucking nihilist. Mission accomplished. You should have your own banner of your own apartment complex. Oh God. So that's that. And that to me is the thinking about the 6 to 8 hours of just like since the news came to seeing the fallout of what usually happens in a tragic event online.
Well, you saw what happened with Kelly Tran.
And
this year and Daisy
horrible.
Ridley last year.
Yes. With, yeah, go on.
Well, no, they just look, it's where but social media could douche canoes find such an open space to do their best to destroy someone who got a once in a lifetime thing they can't have? I hate, literally hate the Phantom Menace. I have made fun of Hayden Christensen's.
Thank you. Oh, you're in my wheelhouse. Yes.
Sure. But I, Hayden Christensen was stiff as shit. So was Natalie Portman. You know.
No chemistry.
Well, and that's not their fault. Their lines were garbage.
But, well, their lines were garbage. At least he could have tried.
But, you know, I saw Looper. No, not Looper. What was the one? Jumper?
Yeah, I saw both those. They were great.
But he was only in one of them, though, which is the point I'm trying to make. And that's, he was a good actor.
Yeah.
And because George Lucas wrote a couple of shitty movies with a couple of shitty characters in it, that dude's fucking done. He's had enough.
Yeah.
And you know, and that was, fuck, dude, that was pre-social media.
Yeah.
But
so is Jake Lloyd. But to me, to what you're saying about what Kelly Tran, Leslie Jones, I think with Leslie Jones and Kelly Tran, the two of them, I think that is basically a white supremacist or a bunch of bros literally attacking women and women of color.
Yeah.
Specifically, you fucking mind your own business. Just like fucking A, whatever they did, what the fuck did they ever do to these people? They're in a fucking movie. And I think that we haven't had that conversation about the Star Wars or The Last Jedi, but it's kind of funny because I enjoyed it and I will enjoy those movies unless they're the Phantom Menace. And I will, you know, it's funny because around me, other people didn't enjoy it as much.
Well, because it was, look, do I think that Rian Johnson destroyed what could have been a really awesome trilogy? Yeah, I do. Do I think he did a bad movie? Fuck no, it was a fun movie.
No, it was fun. There were great moments in it.
Doesn't fit, feels funny, but you know what? I suck it the fuck up and go on because he's better at that than I am. Am I upset that, what's his name? Tiki something, whatever, the director of Thor Ragnarok?
Oh my God.
You know, a guy was wonderful fucking awesome. Movie.
The right director for that movie. Perfect, unbelievable, great humor.
Yeah, except, you know, in Jeff's fandom, Thor should continue to operate in there as though he's not in on the joke. He should be the straight guy for everything else. I think that would have made it a better, stronger movie. But who the fuck am I? I'm some fat dude in Utah who doesn't make fucking movies. Does that mean I jump online and I start talking about whether or not Rian Johnson, you know, or Tiki, I wish the fuck I could remember how to say his name, you know, that they're bad people or that they have race issues or that they, whatever. No, it means I stand with my friends at the comic book shop and they talk about how they think Kenneth Branagh's Thor was awful and I fucking loved it.
Oh, wow.
Was Ragnarok a better movie? Yes. Yes, it was. But
Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi. And Kenneth Branagh, you couldn't have had Thor without the way Kenneth Branagh launched it. That dude took an impossible task and made a really good movie for one of the most difficult characters in the Marvel Universe, a Norse god.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, he went theatrical with it, which right. is what, that was his choice.
Have I ever written George Lucas a letter to tell him that Jar Jar Binks and the trade delegation are racist? No. No, I've bitched a little on a podcast, but George Lucas makes shit that I love and have loved my whole life. So, no. No, I'm not going to jump online and be shitty to George Lucas unless I've done it, and then sorry about that. But still, what I've watched over these last few years, and this is different, and it could be, you know, when The Phantom Menace came out, I didn't have an online portal to see any kind of race hate, or maybe the white supremacists were giggling at how overtly racist the trade delegation was, or Jar Jar Binks, or whatever. I don't know, because I didn't hang out with those people. That was back when we were still, you know, punching them on site. And the Denver cops were giving us pats on the back when we did it. You know, that was my life then. Now, these little fuckers can hide anywhere. They can be anyone. They can say whatever the fuck they want. And I'm over here, and it may be age, it may be whatever, but why the fuck would you feel it's your goddamn duty to take a shit all over somebody in a fucking movie to the point that you... They broke Hayden Christensen. They just fucking broke that. Who the fuck is Jake Lloyd, and why do you keep saying his name? I gotta look this up.
Because he's the original Anakin. He's the Anakin kid.
Oh, he's got it coming. Look at him. Oh, my God. No.
I mean, it's like, you know, you peak early and then the rest of your life is over.
Look at him. He's a handsome young fellow. I don't have a problem with the and shit, man. Who would pick on him? He's Annie.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing is that what the fuck did Leslie Jones fucking do to you? The only thing that they wanted to do, him, you know, Milo, whatever the fuck his last name is, they wanted to go right at the Ghostbusters remake. And, you know, I haven't seen it yet. I don't care. But just to, like, spend your entire time trying to make some kind of dick-swinging move just saying like, oh, you're women and you're not worthy enough. You know, whatever the fuck it is that they had problems with, because they obviously didn't see the movie, nor did they care. No, the whole thing was just to like raise a fucking stink and drop a turd in the punch bowl. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. This is okay. So these days, Lloyd not only won't watch episode one, blaming George Lucas for failing to meet the standards of the public. He wants nothing to do with the franchise at all, noting he's only reprised his role as Anakin for 5 video games. Only 5! And avowing that he's learning to hate it when cameras are pointed out. That's sad, man.
That's sad.
Yeah. All right. Look, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's actually talk about movies we love. Can we do that?
Yes, let's definitely do that. Why the heck not?
Awesome.
Hey, Chucklehead, let me ask you a question. When you went to college, they made you pay for it, right? Higher education costs something. It's not free. But here you are, listening to the shows on the Defenestrate Media Broadcast Network, receiving a higher education than you can get in the Ivy League. And you're listening to it all for free. For nothing. Do us all a favor, freeloader. Head over to theleftshow.com and drop a few bucks with the donate button. Think about it. If these shows go away, what are you and your drum circle gonna listen to while you're making patchouli incense and painting your protest signs? Limbaugh? Really? Get serious. Theleftshow.com. Do the right thing for the left wing.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests, good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the 7th draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute, whoops, welcome to the Coffee Cast. Remember, you can download a fresh Coffee Cast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The Coffee Cast podcast.
What do you miss when you miss The Left Show?
Huckabee, being a former pastor,
yeah,
and the biggest mouthpiece for the Christian right, has proven himself time and again to not be a Christian because he believes that Levitical law is absolute and was never removed by Christ.
Right. So he's a rabbi, and therefore not Christian.
Yeah, yes. He's Rabbi Huckabee.
Why not? Then he gets to eat better deli food.
Oh. Haven't the Jews been through enough?
Yeah.
That was a good point. Good point.
I am pretty sure.
Was that
I know
one.
We got a little bit to go, but I am pretty sure Taylor just won the show.
Fresh episodes every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, and theleftshow.com.
Was that, I've started. Have you started or are you playing?
Oh, I was just playing and waiting. Playing and waiting. Some incidental tunes in the background. Yeah. Heavy on the Mellotron. And speaking of Mellotron, maybe we come back in 3, 2, 1. Speaking of Mellotron.
No, I was really... I'm playing all that other stuff.
All right.
That was good.
That was my kids.
What?
That last bit. That was my kids.
Well, that was good. You should send me their MP3s.
You will be impressed. I will definitely do that.
I like that.
It's taken forever. They haven't put the vocal tracks down, but it's taken forever for them to get... I am impressed with this latest round. So there you have it. I'm sure this will get back to them from their friends who listen to the show.
Sure.
And that's where. So, Solo. The Solo, your first thoughts.
Loved it.
Okay. I'll tell you where I am and how I walked out. I walked out of that movie knowing that I had just watched a movie.
That was a movie.
Yeah, that's it. That was what I took away.
It wasn't a film. It was a movie.
The further that I got away from it, the more I found that my recollections of it were happy. And now that I'm a couple weeks removed from it, you know, I'm desperate to find the time and the money to get back and see it again. Yeah. I didn't give the kid who plays Han Solo a fair shake, I'll be honest. Every time he did something or said something, you know, it was always like, it's not quite there. And then I remembered that I did that in 2009 with Chris Pine and Captain Kirk. And now that I go back and watch it, I'm like, fucking, I love Chris Pine as Captain Kirk. And I need to give this kid that same thing. And please, dear God, make more of these, because when I saw how it ended and who it ended with, I was excited. I'm like, oh, good.
Well, we're going to have some trouble here because the industry people are saying that this is considered a failure. And to me, I walked out and I enjoyed the movie. I loved the twist at the end. It's exactly the kind of betrayal that you expect to have. You know,
they should never, ever in a million fucking years released that so soon after Deadpool and Avengers.
You know, I haven't seen the new Avengers and I haven't seen the new Deadpool, although I love those franchises.
How are you people? How do you avoid those two? The two best movies of the last year or so.
I know. Well, at least I saw Ragnarok. So, well, but Alden, our Amelia Clark, great. Fantastic. Woody, you've known Woody all the way back, you know, the cheers and all the roles that he's played. Woody is Woody. Okay.
Can I tell you something? He's
great. Yeah.
I don't like Woody Harrelson very much.
And Donald Glover. Great. Just slip right into the performance.
Sure.
Of Lando.
Sure.
I loved what he did with it. But I think Alden, Aaron Rich is his name, plays Han. We've all followed the story about how the production was troubled and then they fired the two directors and, you know, brought in Ron Howard. And they were even giving, you know, Alden Ehrenreich acting lessons at some point. And I was thinking, like, this is really a problem. I mean, you don't want this information out, you know. But to me, nevertheless, Ron Howard knows how to create an excellent film, an excellent storyline. And I was really happy with how it all kind of came together. So if you don't like my point of view, listener, whoever it is, you could turn this off for the rest of the show because I liked it. I really was impressed by it. Yeah, and there are spoilers. The bringing back of Darth Maul.
Well, you, sir, don't watch the cartoons and therefore don't know he's been back for ages.
I didn't know that because I don't watch the cartoons.
Yeah, me either.
But because I was told do not shop at the Darth Mall.
No, sir. You cannot have that.
No.
You apologize
American
right
Express,
now.
MasterCard or death. Don't shop at the Darth Mall. Okay. But he's been back for a while and he's got creepy legs. And there you go.
Yeah.
So what more do you want? Tell me more. I mean,
well, if you haven't seen the Avengers and Deadpool, then that takes a good chunk out of this particular portion of our conversation.
We can still talk about it.
Well, Avengers was fucking amazing, and Deadpool was also amazing. Well, that's people that are in love with their project.
And, that's true.
And in that one, you've got The first one, they were expected to tank, which is why they had all their money taken away, and they found a really good way to avoid all that. I mean, that was the whole thing about leaving his weapons in the car in the first one, is they didn't have enough money for a big gunfight. So,
oh, you're shitting me, really?
Yeah. So that was how they wrote around that problem, because they had a big gunfight in it written in the original script, and they didn't have enough money, so he left all his guns in the taxi. Yeah. And so with this one, they had the money. They did more fights. There was a lot more fighting. And it was just wonderful. It was funny. It was great. Josh Brolin was amazing. The X-Force was fucking amazing. I mean, the whole goddamn thing. One of my favorites being, the Vanisher. It was just, you'll like it. If you ever get around to seeing it, which you should, you'll like it.
Yes. Yes. And I will. I will. Sometimes I don't have anybody to go with, just because I've been going to so many Marvel movies lately. So if I'm not going to any movies, I'm going to a Marvel movie.
I don't know. I love going by myself. I love going to movies by myself.
I just like sharing the experience with somebody.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I had enough of my life, going it alone. And I much would rather have someone come with me.
Sure.
That's just better that way, because, then you see the hand get chopped off, and then you see Vader say, "I am your father." And you just go, "Holy fuck. Did you see that?" Yeah. And the other person said, "Yes, I happened to see that. I not only saw that, I heard it. And that's shocking." And I said, I think that's shocking. And everybody around to say, "Shut the fuck up. The movie's not done with." So that's kind of what happens when you have that shared experience. It's most important.
I don't know. Most of my life, I have had a desire and a crave to go and see movies by myself. I do have friends that I like to go with. I really do. A couple in particular that I love to go with more than anybody else. I like going with my kids sometimes.
Yeah,
I like having the experience with my kids and but for the most part, sometimes they just don't. Well, let's put it this way. I went to see Star Trek Into Darkness, mm-hmm. which, by all means, is, again, I've gone to see a movie, not a film. I'm not seeing anything that's going to change my life or give me emotional heartbreak, right? I mm-hmm. knew that it was loosely based on Wrath of Khan, by the time I went in there. But at the end, when fucking Kirk dies, I'm taken back. I am transported to engineering in Wrath of Khan. And again,
yes,
keep in
right.
mind, I'm not a huge Spock fan. Never really have been as a character. But nah, dude, it's all Kirk for me. But there's a moment in that movie that to this day chokes me. And that's when Kirk flees the bridge and he runs into engineering and he goes running for the door, to the weird 70s wet bar / warp core. And again, because it is so silly, and mm-hmm. and when McCoy catches him on one side, fucking Scotty catches him on the other, and Scotty's all, "He's dead already, man." Every fucking time, I'm just like, it's not Kirk's speech. It's not, which I love, which was brilliant. One of Shatner's most amazing acting moments. It wasn't his speech. It was the look on Shatner's face the minute that the words came out of Scotty's mouth and you just saw the utter hopelessness of the situation. Well, between Pine and Quinto, again, it wasn't perfect, but it was good enough that it set me off. And I am with my daughter, Kai, is what, 3-4 years ago now? And mm-hmm. she looks over and I am dripping from the eyeballs. that was a huge moment for me in film was when Spock died and the way that his friends, not to keep this in a weird suicidal tone, because.
Well, we're dealing with death today, so why not?
Well, because that's, by the way, that's basically the central line of Deadpool, is him trying to kill himself. Literally. Hmm. Because he can't.
Yeah, he can't.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's just where it's at. And so with this one is it's the folks that were left over on that one, and it obviously affected them to the point that we got what I think Star Trek III was a piece of shit movie. However.
Yes, it was.
The first half an hour, 45 minutes, is fun. I loved it. Much like people don't like Star Trek V, I love Star Trek V. The only thing
talk about this.
The only thing I don't like is the part where you can tell right exactly they stole all the money from his ending. But that what does God need with the starship thing is to me one of the most brilliantly scripted moments in that entire fucking franchise where everybody's all, holy shit, it's God. And Kirk's all, God doesn't need a spaceship. Why doesn't anybody else know that God doesn't need a spaceship? He's God. Therefore, that's not God. And just in case, let me hedge my bet a little and say, excuse me.
Yeah.
It was just, I mean, it was a great character moment. It was a great movie moment. It was well written. And then we got to the end where, oops. Because I'm just saying, any civilization that can build a trap for an entity that strong probably could have shot phasers at him and killed him just like the goddamn Klingons did.
Right. Well, also the perception. You are intuitively aware as a writer in the canon of who Kirk is. Kirk breaks molds. The idea is people are led down a particular path, and yet he just goes, no, this is too conventional. Don't you understand? Rules were meant to be broken. And so he just says, listen, you know, God does not need, I mean, why do you think that this is a God? God doesn't need a starship. So just like snap out of it. And that is Kirk. That is the essence of Kirk right there.
And it's.
And if you're a writer and you're in the canon of it, of course. Yes, of course. And that is precisely the prescribed place where he needs to say that.
I still like Bones on that one. He's like, you don't ask the Almighty for his ID. Yeah, you do. You absolutely do.
which is a Bones. That's a Bones, you know, line.
Yeah.
Four was very, very entertaining. Four, if not for anything.
Constantly bugs the fuck out of me. And again, it is a movie with a lot of really, really nice high tones to it. But you look at Four and you look at the money that it made and you look at the fact that Shatner has been shat on by the industry for years. And now he has carte blanche, and that had a lot to do with Boston Legal and his own just dumping energy into his own persona over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's hard to find now, and I thought I had a copy on the hard drive, and I must have killed that hard drive. There is, I think it was a fourth or fifth draft script of Star Trek V that's close to what we got, but it was the one with the budget. So Nimoy shows up, does Four, you know, gets a good budget, makes a shitload of money. Due to the contract that they had signed with Paramount, Shatner now gets to do a movie. He had a good script. It was a solid script. But it was supposed to be in parallel. If Nimoy got this much or Shatner got this much, the other one got that much, and et cetera. What happened was that Paramount was tanking, you know? And they just took all the money, and he had nothing to do for post-production. Somewhere in the world, my hope is, if I'm remembering it back, there is some of the scene shot for the original script. And maybe someday somebody will go back and fix that and just remove, you know.
If Paramount wants to do it, I mean, they should have done it.
Of course they don't.
Already by now. I mean, Paramount is finally, look, you have the resources, but they don't seem to have the vision that some of these other places have.
Yeah. So,
you know, and they've been lucky. They've gotten extremely lucky. And okay, so now Tarantino is slated to do the next Star Trek. So what are your thoughts on that?
That is incorrect. You, sir, are geeking incorrectly. He is doing the one after the next one.
Really?
Yeah. Let me pull that one up really. Hang on a sec.
Okay.
Say something funny.
Anton Yelchin, they lost Anton Yelchin. I just, what are you going to do? I mean, how do you, a principal player?
No. All due respect to that. Do you not remember the original series? Chekhov was an add-on.
I know Chekhov is, but no, I mean, he's still part of the group.
Also, we're in a brand new universe, and he could just as easily be transferred to another ship, and they can have a 10-second dialogue about how much they're going to miss him. You know, it's, I mean, oh, you can write around that so easy.
Okay.
No problem.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. One of my favorite recollections was a two-part in which George Takei and Shatner were recalling something to do with Star Trek VI, Undiscovered Country, and how excited George Takei was to get his own starship.
Yes.
And right. he had talked to Shatner about it, and he was like, I got my own ship. I am a captain. I got my own ship. And Shatner's like, wouldn't you rather be on the Enterprise where all the stuff's going to happen because this is a Star Trek movie? And George Takei's like, see what an asshole he is? I'm like, dude, he invited you to pull your head out of your ass. But there you are with your own ship. Okie dokie. So,
you know about his relationship with Shatner.
Well, yeah, he didn't like that Shatner was the star of the show.
No, I thought that Shatner was very harsh on George Takei because he was gay.
No, fuck no. No, that's...
Well, then what is the story on that, then?
That Shatner and Nimoy, but apparently Shatner the most, was a camera hog in the show in which he was the star. And that George Takei wanted more camera time, but he couldn't have it because Shatner always got it. And so they bristled, and he got pouty and bitchy about it, and just turned it into a lifelong goddamn cash cow about taking a shit on William Shatner. And it is disingenuous. It is whiny. You go back and, what the hell was that show he did on Bravo? The interview show with the weird S-shaped chair thing.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that.
And he had Walter Koenig on, and they were talking about it, too. And Koenig was like, no, understand, it's of course Takei and I are very good friends. I was the best man at his wedding. And Shatner's like, well, that's great. Can I ask you a question? And I really want you to understand that I'm not being a dick. I'm paraphrasing. And he said, before you got the call to come and be his best man, how long had it been since you would talk to George Takei? And you watch Koenig fucking deflate when he realizes that it had been years and years and years, and that he got invited there to be a fucking stunt casting while, you know, Shatner wasn't. Because when I go back and read the books that they wrote in the 70s and the recollections of and the interviews and all of that, the only person bitching about Shatner is Takei. And then that has turned into canon over the years. William Shatner does not have a problem with gay people. You know, he's worked in the industry too long. And he has... too many things and too many places and too many charities that he's been involved with that are positive. So it's just Takei. He has a problem with the fact that Takei won't shut the fuck up about how unfairly he was treated at that particular time, you know, in American television history. It's infuriating. Stop being whiny, man. You had a pretty good career. You were great on Heroes, for Christ's sake. You were added on, not even in the first show. You were added on partway into season one. You had a good run. You had character arcs. You get to take your shirt off and look fantastic. In the fucking early 60s in America, where racism rocks supreme, and you're pissed off that the white guy who's the fucking star of the show, it's his show, man. You know? It's fucking Star Trek. Star Trek, Captain Kirk. Who's better? Captain Kirk, Captain Picard. Not who's better, you know, Wesley or you know, or Sulu. That's not a thing. It's got nothing to do with nothing. You push the buttons, you drive the boat. Shut the fuck up and get us where we gotta go. You know? And to be honest, fuck, John Cho is way better at that role than George Takei ever was. So he can bite me. Shatner forever! Love the man. According to Variety, Paramount is bringing S.J. Clarkson on to be running Star Trek IV as its director. That's the next installment of the franchise. So it is going to arrive before the J.J. Abrams-produced Quentin Tarantino script or Trek that will be the fifth.
Hmm.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So we've been able to deal with the loss of Anton Yelchin, and we're talking about the next steps of where they're going to go. What have you thought about the third reinstallment of Star Trek, the cinematic one with Chris Pine? I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
I think it was nice that J.J. Abrams had a chance to practice on a space movie before he went and did a really good Star Wars movie.
Yeah, that's true.
I love the 2009. I think that it's got plot holes so big you could drive that insanely big mining ship into it. You don't shoot mutineers off the fucking ship. You put them in the brig. Just so many just bad choices that I still loved the movie. I love the movie. I just watched it the other day just to have it on. You know, could have been better. Which is, I mean, my complaint for a lot of stuff is it just could have been better. The second one, Into Darkness, had they done the reveal of Khan where he said his whole fucking name, because let us not forget that Khan is a name. It's been around a while on the Earth from Genghis on, and he's just like, my name is Khan. All right, congratulations. You know, Khan Nun Yung Tsung. Oh, you're that asshole. You're famous.
And you're critically important to the story, to the entire canon of Star Trek. And yet, who the fuck in marketing thought that that was a really good idea? You could have revealed that in the fucking movie and have that leak out another different way. But no, you had to break it in the fucking commercial. In the trailer.
Yeah, it's bad marketing. But you
it
know
was
what?
Bad.
I liked the movie. I really, really did. I had that on after I watched the first one the other day. And then you get to Beyond.
Yeah.
And Beyond was the best of the three so far because it got to be its own thing. My tiny, itty-bitty little problem with all three movies is, could you please, for the love of fuck, stop destroying the goddamn ship?
They do that.
That's
all they do. They wreck the ship over and over and over again.
We're over it. Have it taken away. Have it broken. Have it, you know, somebody pull the power plug. Whatever you got to do. Who gives a fuck? Just stop blowing up the ship. It's not the same ship. We just want a ship. You know? And that's really it. It is this weird trope. You go back to the old shows and the old movies, we really only blew up two fucking ships, you know? And that's it. And they were both the Enterprise. And I got to admit, when they crashed the saucer section in that weird next-gen movie.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. It was neat. Flying saucer crashes to Class M planet. All right. But I do. I'm looking forward more, honestly, and this is weird because I really do love Quentin Tarantino. I don't know what he's going to do. It's going to be wacky and different, or it's going to be the most amazing fucking thing in the world. You know?
To which I want to mark that, put a pin in that for just a second, because you're putting your finger on something that I don't think people seem to understand as we move forward in time. These storylines, you know, be it Star Wars, Star Trek, need to be dimensionalized. They need to have different directions, and please don't hold yourself so close to the Bible, to the storyline of what's supposed to be. It is supposed to breathe. Things are, unpredictability is supposed to happen. And so when I experienced different parts of The Last Jedi, I was delighted to see Yoda. I was delighted to see him destroy, or we thought that he destroyed the books, the sacred texts, or the whatever moments that were in there.
You did. You saw him in the drawer too?
I did. I saw the one of the last frames, the last scenes. Yep. They're in the drawer. So you have nothing to worry about. So the Jedi text will be carried out, carried on. And there are dimensions. There is a dimensionality that this has to have. You have to breathe and go beyond from what it is. So I don't know what the trouble people had with The Last Jedi. I really don't know. I mean, you know, because I would hear things like, well, there was too comedic. You know, there was, you know, it's just like, I think all of these movies, even if you go to Empire, there were comedic moments all throughout that movie.
Yeah.
And I don't understand what you're talking about, because we're going into new places. And if we're losing people, I don't understand why we're losing people.
Look, I'm fine. Honestly, it was the tossing the saber over his shoulder. It was the sea cow milk. They were notes on a character that did not ring true. Were they funny? Yeah, when he threw the fucking saber over his shoulder, I laughed my ass off. You know? But I was uncomfortable about it. You know, it's like laughing at a joke about Polish people. They were funny when I was a kid. They don't feel funny anymore. They're still a little funny. You just replace the country with something else, like America. So, you know, I mean, that was just really what it was. It was a bunch of it that didn't ring true. The whole thing at the end, fine. Loved it. You know, the bit where Kylo Ren, you know, force throws the redheaded dude into the console and the driver, the AT-AT's like, you bet, anything you want. Stuff like that, no, I'm fine with. Poe Dameron's whole fucking, I'll hold at the beginning. Oh my God, it was like the best thing ever. It was, and I think it was why Mark Hamill was uncomfortable so much of that movie. You know, at the beginning and with the press and all that, I think that was why, is it was just like, this character doesn't ring true. It's the same problem I have with Thor Ragnarok, you know, is let him be the straight man for these fucking jokes. You make him part of it I don't know. I loved it too.
No, that's fine. I understand. So you understand the character. He just didn't seem to ring true to you.
No. But he was still great. Most of it was true. Most of it was fucking perfect. You know, that's all. It was just a couple of things that, you know, I don't know. It's Rian Johnson is better at this than I will ever, ever be. And I think he did a good job. I think he did a good job at putting an enema into this whole franchise, which was getting to take itself way too seriously.
No shit.
But I don't know. I feel bad for the collateral damage at this point.
I think that the few things that I take away are with these two franchises is, to me, this is going to go beyond maybe what you think. We know that the original Star Wars story was based on Joseph Campbell's, you know, the hero's journey.
What?
But to me, I think of it as the idea that children, be our children, anybody's children, carry the hopes of the next generation to change, to slay the dragons, to destroy, you know, what is bad and to make right. And I can't help but think that, you know, as I see, you know, that the handing over, you know, from one generation to another, Star Wars particularly, I mean, they are our hope. They've always been. They always will be.
Yep.
They're the first to be sent into battle. You know, not the old people, the young ones. Yes, the younglings. And you
careful.
And I, there's a whole good one there. But to me, that's one of my takeaways. And the first five, 10 minutes of 2009 Star Trek.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So emotional. It's just, you see, you see the call, the response, you know, the ship is in immediate trouble. Kirk Sr., you know, takes the controls.
George.
You know, the wife is having, you know, Kirk Jr., they get away. He's able to stall things enough so that everybody gets away. And then it's just like, that is immensely emotional. Emotional money, a fantastic moment, especially, you know, later on in the movie where, you know, Kirk Jr. is confronted, you know, by somebody from, who am I trying to remember from?
Captain Pike.
And tells him, he just says, your father, you know, made it possible, you know, to save 800 lives.
Your dad was a Starfleet captain for 8 minutes and saved hundreds of lives. I dare you to do better.
To do better.
Do you want to, we can do this. I can sit here and do this. This is what I do.
Boom. Boom. That's it. That's the line.
I had my own, never mind. I had my own shuttle. Now, this is a metaphorical shuttle. Not a physical shuttle. I had my own shuttle in the Star Trek fan club in Pleasant Grove, Utah, in the late 80s because I was one of the only ones who would admit to being what I was. I, to this day, as a 45-year-old man with arthritis getting bad enough, I can't play guitar anymore. I could barely pick shit up off the floor without really thinking about it for a while. But I still want my own... the rust colored, you know, overlapping uniform, the one from Star Trek II and on for a while. I would wear the shit out of that. I'd wear that every goddamn day. So, I mean, I'm just saying I dork out. So let me do this. We're kind of at an hour and I got to get moving, but let me throw out a couple of things that are still coming. So that you are ready for what is coming up. To me, I look at it and I go, oh, goody, an expensive summer. But the truth is, most of my expense is now behind me. But on July 6th, I have Ant-Man and the Wasp. July 27th, I got Teen Titans Go. Venom's out in October. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is out in December. Now, that's an animated movie, but the truth is it's one of the first animated movies I am just really, really excited to see because we get Miles Morales. You remember the Spider-Man that pissed off Rush Limbaugh and the other right-wing hate mongers?
Right.
Yeah, you got Aquaman coming out in December. But right. outside of that, sir, I grant you, Ocean's 8, as we record this, is out
that's right.
today.
This is happening.
Hereditary is out today.
Yeah.
That one's supposed to be the scariest one ever.
Toni Collette, if anybody has followed Toni Collette, she's an amazing actress.
And so, so flexible. You know?
Versatile.
Versatile. Funny. She can play anything.
Amazing.
I think that she is as good as what's her name?
Yes,
Meryl Streep.
Her. Streep?
Yep.
Streepy?
Yep.
Yep.
The Incredibles 2 is out next week.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely Incredibles.
I'm taking my youngest to see that one. He's really excited. Jurassic World is out in 2 weeks. I am so looking forward to that one. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. It's dinosaurs and Star-Lord and, you know, Ron Howard's kid. Who, thank God, looks the way she does and not like Clint Howard. Did you see?
He's dead.
Did you see?
Clint or his dad.
Clint.
If you've been watching Arrested Development, his dad's in it.
Who's dad?
Ron Howard's dad.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rance Howard.
I did not know that.
He's not very young.
No, he's not. But did you see Clint?
Yes.
In
no,
Solo?
I didn't. Which one was he?
He was the guy running the robot fight.
Oh, I got to watch that
dude,
again.
I can spot Clint Howard anywhere, who, by the way, was on Star Trek, the original series.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he played the little emperor.
Oh, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Before Gentle Ben.
Yeah. So you've got Sicario 2. I haven't seen Sicario 1. I don't know why. Emily Blunt's in it, so I should probably see it.
But, she's great.
Yep.
Emily Blunt's great.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, we mentioned. Mission Impossible? You know what I want? You know why I'm one of the reasons I'm looking forward to Mission Impossible? Because I've enjoyed every single one of them so far. And I will go see this one as well. And I will see it very happily. But one of the reasons I am so excited for this movie to be coming out soon is I am so fucking sick of the trailer before everything I see since January. We get it. Tom Cruise is better than us. Scientology works. Look at him. And then Replicas.
Xenu.
Replicas. If you have not gone online to watch the trailer for Replicas, it's coming out mid-August, do so. It looks fucking awesome. And that's it. You got Crazy Rich Asians, which I just really could not give a shit about. You've got The Spy Who Dumped Me, which I will probably take my girlfriend to. It looks good. It's Mila Kunis, Justin Theroux, Kate McKinnon. I don't know. There's a lot of good shit coming out this year. So it's not all suicide. It's not all death and sadness.
No, not yet.
No. So I'm looking forward to all of it. It's going to cost me a little bit, which maybe that's why you could probably think I like seeing movies by myself.
Mm, it is cheaper that way. You do have a point. Oh man.
Yeah.
And I think with that is a most excellent way to think about wrapping it up.
Hey, most excellent. You did see the news that we are getting a third Bill and Ted movie, yeah?
Yes, I did. How shocking.
Not at all.
We don't have George Carlin.
That's okay. We're getting the guy who played Death back as Death. I cannot for the life of me remember what the fuck his name was, but he was so wonderful in that second movie. And the second movie is a turd. Yes, don't hold your fucking emails. I don't care. I love it anyway. For all of the warts and all, I can't wait for number three. I think number three is going to be amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the least that we could say is that, man, thank you so much. This has been good therapy for today.
Be excellent to each other. And then you say, party on, dude.